Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to Catherine's Lobby. It's the evening of day number...
Nine.
I was just about to say ten. I'm not so good at that, am I? We've had a bit of an issue with energy levels today because the weather has been horrific, Catherine. New York was not supposed to be laying this on today, was it?
I can't work in these conditions.
I'll tell you, I had 4 days of this in my first ever year without a tennis roof, Matt. Imagine that.
Yeah, that would be miserable. Although I suppose you wouldn't really have to do anything because there was no play, right?
No, all I had to do was sit there for about 8 hours giving half-hourly updates on how it was raining.
Yeah, that's grim.
Yeah. But so thankfully we have had continuous play at least on the main court, which is the Arthur Ashe Stadium court. So we've already seen three singles matches as we come to you. Matt and I will be back late in the night, because that's what tennis does, to wrap up the Nick Kyrgios against Karen Khachanov match, which is just getting underway now. But before we do that, let me just remind you of our incredible competition for the Australian Open. You, if you are a friend of the Tennis Podcast, could be going with a guest of yours to the Australian Open with return economy flights, two of those, accommodation paid for three nights, 4 days of tickets for the Australian Open as well, and a premium experience. You just need to be a friend of the Tennis Podcast. Sign up. The link is in our show notes. It's all courtesy of AO Travel, who put all of this stuff on. You only have to go to them, and they'll sort out the lot. AusOpenTravel.com to find out what they offer. But become a friend first, if you're not already, and enter the competition. And get our other free podcasts, our other bonus podcasts that we produce throughout the year. 20 of those are already up. We're going to do another one next week, then Q&As. But for tonight, we're going to talk about what went on today. All of the matches in singles were straight sets to this point, Catherine. That, I think of all the things I expected to happen today, that's one of them that I really didn't expect.
Yes, you're right about that. I hadn't quite clocked that they were all straight sets because they all felt so very different. They were three very different brands of straight sets match.
Yeah.
I think. Don't know which one you want to deal with first.
I want to start with Coco Gauff against Caroline Garcia, because, I mean, I think that is the one that attracts attention most here in this country. That was the headline of the day, wasn't it? That's the one that America and New York and the US Open were most interested in. And Coco Gauff couldn't deliver tonight. Now, how much of that do you put down to her? How much of it do you put down to Garcia?
I put almost all of it down to Garcia. I'm not sure what more Coco Gauff could have done today, realistically. I was pretty blown away by Garcia tonight, I have to say. I wasn't in the stadium. I was watching on a screen, Matt. I think you were in the stadium, so... maybe your take will be different and more reliable. But, you know, I'm sitting there waiting for her to blink, waiting for her to choke. And it's a different player. I can't quite believe what I'm seeing with Caroline Garcia right now, actually.
Mm. No, I feel similarly. Matt?
I agree. I mean, she blew me away tonight. It started out, I think, a bit weirdly. It wasn't packed at the start. I was expecting there to be this incredible atmosphere for Coco Gauff. And it was fine, but it wasn't what I was expecting. And the stadium was just a little bit flat. And I don't really have an explanation for that. And I think Gauff started a little bit flat. She was 4-love down in 17 minutes. And a lot of that, as you said, was because Garcia started so fast and just imposed herself. But Gauff didn't get into the match until about 20 minutes in. And when Garcia's in this form, I just don't think you can afford to give her that kind of lead, really. And the second set was what impressed me most with Garcia, because that was the moment where Gauff did get into some games. You know, she had love 30 and some games. She had some break points. And there, it was the 4-3 game with Garcia serving. Love 30 down. She then hit a massive forehand winner up the line at the end of a long rally, an ace, another massive forehand winner which drew an error, and then another ace. Just four flawless points at the moment of biggest pressure. And I just thought, well, that's it. Caroline Garcia is a different player now. And that's who she is, certainly in this run of form. And, yeah, she's going to win. And she did.
It gave me Kenin against Muguruza Australian Open, the game that I think won her that Australian Open final. It gave me those feels, that game. And you just have to go, oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
You're just winning. You're just unplayable.
Yeah. There's nothing anybody could have done. But I found myself thinking, well, you were saying you were waiting for her to choke, which I think all of us who've been around for a while and watched a lot of Caroline Garcia were thinking exactly the same thing. Where is the 10 years of baggage here? Where is the scar tissue? She doesn't look like she has any at all right now. She looks completely fresh. And in her interview, she just seems uninhibited by anything. Nothing's bothering her. And I'm waiting for something to just make her pause for a second and just kind of shake on the spot. And I'm not wishing that on her, but I'm sort of expecting that to happen. And yet she managed to deal with it all. And I think she just looks at that particular match win as a stepping stone in this run. She didn't doubt herself for a second. Gauff has, I don't think she'll have many regrets, because I think she'll be able to accept what happened, but at the same time I think the fact she went 4-love down will hurt. You know, once you do that, you've got such a fight on your hands to kind of feel part of the occasion, especially in these best of three set matches. But it reminded me quite a lot of the French Open final, the way Świątek just overwhelmed her and stopped her playing. It's just another example of, yeah, there's a way to go yet. There are better players than her at the moment.
Yeah, and something I thought might happen was the Gauff second serve would be vulnerable, and I think she only won 27% of points behind it. And it's so intimidating playing Garcia at the moment. I mean, I know we've talked about this before, but she is on the baseline for returning the first serve. And Coco Gauff, this tournament, has hit 128-mile-an-hour first serve. She's got a huge delivery. Garcia's just, you know, putting it back at her almost before she's finished her motion. She's so aggressive with it, and then she's inside the baseline for the second serve, and she just sets the tone for her whole game with that return. And it's the conviction she's playing with, even if she misses a shot, which, you know, she is missing. It's not like she's solely hitting winners. She just brushes it off and approaches the next point in the same way, and it is a different player. She's awesome.
She said in advance of this match, when she was being asked about her new coach,
Bertrand Perret.
Thank you. I was trying, when I made a note of it earlier in my head when I was trying to remember it so I wouldn't have to look down at my notes on Prime Video, I was thinking, just think of the most French name you can imagine. and yes, Bertrand Perret. She'd been talking about what he's been bringing to the party and saying that for so long she'd felt caught in a nether zone between caution and aggression. And he has helped her clarify where she should be on that scale and when, and made it simple for her. And that helps make sense of the last 11 years of her career since Andy Murray said she'd be world number one, doesn't it? That kind of does sum it up. I wouldn't know. She's looked like a sort of aggressive player trapped in the body of a confused player to me, and she's found a way to really package her aggression, but in a way that has margins. And what's blowing me away about her is we've known about the skill and the ability level and the smoothness of those shots and the easy power since Andy Murray tweeted about her, let's face it. I know we keep harking back to it, but, you know, it was a massive moment.
It's impossible not to reference it is, back to, isn't it?
I didn't realise she was this much of a competitor, and maybe she wasn't always. Maybe that's something that Bertrand has really evoked in her. But I tend to think that competitive spirit isn't something that can really be learned. I think it's sort of there or not. So it's obviously always been there, just sort of more dormant than it is now. But she was fierce out there tonight on biggest tennis stadium in the world, facing the young American hope, channeling the ghost of Serena Williams. And she didn't blink. She was
ready for it, wasn't she? Like, she was prepared for anything, I think, tonight. As you said, she was prepared to compete. She was prepared to take on the crowd if it did get loud. She was prepared for Goff's game. She just felt ready. And she's playing the best tennis in the tournament. I mean, she's been playing the best tennis for the last few months, really. And I think, as you were saying, that baggage, that 10-year baggage, I've been waiting for it. But it's not coming, and she is playing the best tennis, and I think we have to be looking at her as probably the favourite for the title right now.
Wow. Yeah, and I can't argue that. All that experience, and I referenced last night, like the highest high-spec car that could blow up and break down. Well, tonight she was given every chance to do that in that sort of situation. She just didn't. Even when under pressure, she went for the shot, she produced the shot, she doubted herself not for a second, and 13 match wins in a row. And she spoke to Pam Shriver on the court last night, and it was just the moment when she said, I just go for it. And I thought, you've simplified tennis in your mind, and that must make life so much more straightforward.
What does Billie Jean King say? Just go for it.
Yep. I reckon Billie Jean's been in her ear.
I wouldn't mind an update, Matt, on how your neighbour, the French journalist, is getting on.
Oh, how funny was it, the chap behind you, Eric Salio?
Eric Salio,
Oh, it's so fun sitting next to him when he was commentating on it.
Yeah. Oh, he was having the time of his life.
at the moment of...
he was standing up.
Yeah. Oh. He jumped out of his seat, full on stood up with the headphones on until they yanked him back down into his seat.
This sounds like a setup. I didn't know this.
It was
so
amazing.
Glad I asked.
We were looking
David
at each
and I
other
were laughing.
We were having the best time just watching him, because you know what I'm like when I'm commentating big, but I don't think I've ever like jumped out of my seat like I've just, my team has just scored a goal. It was so fun.
I'm loving this. Go on, Eric.
Who's she now play then, Caroline Garcia?
She faces Ons Jabeur.
Oh, of course.
And there's actually quite a lot of history there, because they've met twice on the WTA tour, and Jabeur's won both of those. They also met four times in juniors, I was reading, and Jabeur won all of those. And they were part of that big WTA Rising Stars event in 2015 when Naomi Osaka was there. And Jabeur said, yeah, she's a long time sort of rival, really. But Caroline Garcia's thing this tournament has been overturning those head-to-head deficits. She did it against Alison Risk. She's done it tonight against Coco Gauff. Just all illustrating that she's a different prospect now, I think. And also, Bertrand Perret, our French man, used to coach Ons Jabeur. So there's big links between the two, and yeah, that makes for a fascinating semi-final as well.
Wow. We'll get on to previewing that in a second. I mean, we'll have a full show to talk about it tomorrow as well. But Ons Jabeur today beat Ayla Tomljanovic, who's been one of the stories of the tournament, having beaten Serena Williams, having saved, what was it, 8 match points against Lyudmila Samsonova, or set points, and winning that match. But this one, from the off, and Tomljanovic fought hard, but Jabeur is on it now.
She is, yes, she really is. I do think there is a minor asterisk there in that she's having lapses.
Is she?
She did definitely have one in the second set, big time. Yeah, it all got away from her very quickly, and it was giving me slight Wimbledon final vibes.
I only saw the first set because I was in the Casper Ruud.
She was
presser.
Great in the first set, break up in the second. And then all of a sudden it's all changed, and some of the analysis from the Prime Video team was that she's one of those players that whose technique is unforgiving in terms of tightness. When she gets tight, it really shows in her game. Some players are able to play through it more than others. I'm sure we'll come on to Matteo Berrettini in due course, suddenly she was just spraying the ball left, right and centre. She couldn't even get a slice backhand in court.
Wow.
It went quite bad for a few games, didn't it?
It did. And the serve, I mean, she had a terrible serving day. She was under 40% first serves in. I was listening to the World Feed commentary with Mary Carrillo, and she made the point that the lack of good first serves and sort of easy points that she was winning meant that she was having to rely on her creativity rather than have fun with it, you know. So there was pressure on it, and as you said, under pressure it's much harder to hit those shots. And I just think
she needs to be loose.
She needs to be loose. And she wasn't loose in the first half of that second set, but then when she was down she really tightened it up and didn't make many errors down the stretch and got herself together and managed to come through in two sets. And in the end, I think it's a good win. But yeah, I agree, there were definite lapses, because in the first set she was brilliant. She was moving Tomljanovic from side to side and just picking her apart, really, and I thought, wow, Jabeur's playing brilliantly. And then the second set was much more of a struggle.
I do think there's a real, I'm not quite sure yet where the balance lies between positives and negatives with the Wimbledon final for Ons Jabeur. Obviously, tremendous positive that she reached a Wimbledon final. That's epic and amazing. But I do think there'll be scar tissue from that final. I do. There was a little bit of panic from her, I think, when she squandered that break of serve in the second set, and I just wonder if that little brain worm of the Wimbledon final crept into her mind, which, you know, it's tough to talk about because you don't want to take anything away from Rybakina, who really wrestled that match from her. But I do think there would potentially be regrets and sleepless nights for Jabeur about that Wimbledon final. So it must exist in her brain somewhere, and who knows? She hasn't told me this herself, but I wonder if that gremlin is not quite ready to be exercised. I mean, winning the US Open title would be quite some way to exercise it.
That should do it.
I think what I'm saying is she's playing really well, and it surprised me that she's made the semi-final, quite frankly. We weren't talking about her that much going in, but I do favour Garcia in this semi.
And Jabeur told Rima Abouliel, I think in a private interview, that her goal for this tournament at the start of it was to reach the semi-finals.
Wow.
She said she would be satisfied with that, given where she was coming in. Obviously, Reem said, well, now you're in the semis. And Ons said, yeah, I knew you were going to ask me that. And, yeah, she said, look, there's two more matches. That's, you know, my goal has changed. I want to win it now. I did think that there was quite a lot of frustration, wasn't there, in that second set. Mm. And she joked afterwards that she's going to be fired from her role as Minister of Happiness, which was one of the great lines of the tournament, I think. But it was clear that there was a bit of stress there, and I agree. I do think it was kind of similar to the Wimbledon final, where she didn't maybe let it out so much, and maybe that was a sort of coping mechanism to let it out a bit. And it did end up sort of turning round for her, getting her game together. But yeah, it has come a bit out of the blue for me, this run. You know, well, we were talking about Ons Jabeur ahead of Roland Garros, mm, and ahead of Wimbledon. We weren't here, and she said that I think she felt similarly. You know, she was fresh because she hadn't played that many matches, but she didn't really know what to expect.
That's because she hadn't been winning
exactly
any matches.
That's why I view this as a massive net positive. I think it's a huge sign of mental progression on her part, given that she's somebody that has freestyled her way into the affections of everybody who watches her and got people talking about what she's going to achieve. And here was me saying I don't see her in a mix in my lifetime, and the reason is because I didn't think she had this steel in her to grind out when it's not all flourishes and fancy shots. And she's shown she has got that. She can combine the two. That's what she did at Wimbledon. She didn't quite get over the line, but she came in as one of the favourites for the tournament, and she got to the Wimbledon final. Big achievement, that, even if she didn't win it. To come here without form, and I made her the underdog in two of them at the two previous matches. Kudermetova was a poor head-to-head for her. I also thought she would lose against Shelby Rogers. She saw both of those two off. And now she's won another one against an informed player when she's not necessarily absolutely on top form. And I don't even think it's the best surface for. I think it's a real, real achievement.
I agree.
Totally agree. I just think in terms of her progressing any further, just think, you know, that little gremlin at the back of her mind might be a factor.
I think it could be, for sure.
Caroline Garcia being brilliant could also be a factor.
Well, I think the issue could be that, like she had against Rybakina, you've got somebody who's just hitting you off the court. The way Garcia is going about her business, she's swooping in for the kill with every shot. The other thing, I mean, the other possibility is, and what I think Jabeur has done here, is she's given herself the chance to suddenly flourish. You know, she's got through these gritty matches, these untidy matches at times. And what if she suddenly hits a purple patch now? She could win the whole thing.
And also, you know, the line she gave to Reem about having achieved her target for this slam, maybe that'll totally loosen her up.
Yeah.
Everything from this point on is bonus. We know how much she was targeting the Wimbledon title. Yeah. Anything less than that,
she changed her screensaver to a picture of the trophy, hadn't she?
It's different here.
Actually, that's so cool.
Yeah, you know, that's... I love that, you know, stating your intentions. That's another thing that Americans talk about, isn't it? Be intentional. I don't know what that means.
So you're telling me that the record is, what, about 5-0, effectively, if you count juniors, in the favour of Jabeur?
Yeah.
Very
that's
interesting.
That's right. 6-0, I think.
6-0.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
It is.
But then it was, you know, it was 3-0 to Risk, and it was 2-0 to Goff against Garcia.
I'm really fascinated now. Mm. Oh, you've got me all excited, Matt. This is great. Okay, well, that's to come on, what day is it today? Tuesday. So that's on Thursday night session, isn't it?
Thursday night.
Both of the women's semis are night session, which is great for sort of primetime audiences here. It's middle of the night in the UK and in Europe, but still, it's going to be a cracking night.
Means I get a morning off.
Oh, you get a lie-in.
Hanging on for that lie-in. Hanging on.
Yes, Catherine's got through today, let's say. Done a great job. It's not the easiest when it's raining. Oh. It does sap your energy a bit, doesn't it, here?
Yeah, let's move on, because I feel like the Tennis Podcast listeners get a lot of me complaining about the weather. I'm very Goldilocks about it, aren't I? But there were like 3 days last week when it was glorious.
Yes. Just
absolutely Bring perfect. And I don't understand why it couldn't stay like that.
It's going to be like that again from Thursday.
I understand that to be the case. Yes. And I will grip my teeth and get through Wednesday.
Marvellous.
With a light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay. Well, I found somebody who's had a worse day than you, and that's Matteo Berrettini.
Oh, yeah. I saw him...
Did you?
I saw him leaving the media area just looking so sad.
Oh.
Italians wear emotion well, don't they? And he really...
He makes you feel for him, doesn't he? He is good at that. He seems like just a lovely chap. And today...
No one was giving him a hug.
Oh. He just didn't... He did not turn up today for the first two sets. I mean, or until the last game of the second set or whatever. And then he managed to get a bit of a spurt on. I mean, it was mixed with Casper Ruud playing, I think, probably the best two sets I've ever seen him play. He was awesome. But he was helped to be awesome by Berrettini looking sluggish and ponderous and... just not on it.
To quote Matt Roberts, I think this is what laying an egg looks like.
John McEnroe has been quoted by Matt Roberts.
What was he doing?
Yeah. What was he doing? It was he was so crap.
Sorry, Matteo, but you...
Well,
I
consider that a compliment, you know, big picture, because he's so much better than that. And he knows it. That's why he looked so damn sad. Leaving the press conference is completely different to, you know, seeing Dan Evans, the ultimate competitor after losing to Marin Cilic, where he knew he'd given his absolute best and he'd been part of something special and he'd missed out narrowly to a slightly better man on the day. This could not have been more different. With that level, Casper Ruud might still have won had Matteo Berrettini not laid any eggs. That is a very plausible scenario because he was that good. But, oh, it was lame.
Does that match, I know it's only one match, but does it change how we think about them as players even? Because, honestly, that was a chance for Berrettini. Mm. You know, we've spoken about how... you know, consistent he's been in slams and ended up running into Nadal and Djokovic. Well, they're gone. They're not here. And he puts in that performance against Ruud. Like, he's not been winning against top 10 players. I thought he had the fangs to go out there and muscle his way through that match. And on the flip side, Ruud probably played at a level that I didn't really realise he had in terms of occasionally coming up with some incredible shot making and a little flick lob at one point and sprinting down every ball, and he was everywhere, and it made me think, well, maybe he's, you know, maybe Ruud's better than Berrettini, and I probably would have thought Berrettini was better than Ruud, but yeah,
he was so everywhere. He made Berrettini look slow and lumbering and heavy leg, didn't he? And I'm sure that the tightness and the nerves and the just freezing was a big part of that. I think Berrettini is quicker than he was today, and
the opportunity might have paralysed him. That's a possibility. Without, you know, nothing... That sounds very dramatic, but look, he was winning... He won two of the first 13 games of the match. It's just not...
It was just not good enough.
In a couple of quotes from his press conference today, he said, I think he had the best start possible and I helped him. And then later on he's asked about what happened, because referencing back to that mental approach that he wasn't happy with in the previous... round against Davidovich Fokina. He said, my game was okay, but mentally I just wasn't into the match at the start. He says here, I don't know what happened today. I'm going to let it pass for a few days and then I'm going to think about what happened. Now it's too soon, but something happened and I'm really not happy about it. And I think what I do trust is that I like the fact that already he's owning that and he's going to go away and always think back to his lockdown Instagram Live with Chris Evert, of all people, where he just...
No, because that had his ex-girlfriend in.
It did.
And I...
But, you know, he was so candid about how he wanted to work on his game, how aware of his weaknesses he was. And he will go back and study and figure this out. Whether he can overcome it is another matter. It's a massive opportunity that he's let slip. I do think it changes the way I feel about him for now, but he can turn it around.
Yes, because for now it's a slightly anomalous data point, isn't it? So it's like, okay, let's...
But we will have it in mind.
Yeah. Know, absolutely. Next time we're doing crap predictions.
Next time he's in the Grand Slam,
it will be in our minds, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I agree. I love the way he's owned it. And I think that's what's really likeable about him in particular. He's very self-aware.
What about Casper Ruud? And I went in his press conference afterwards, and he was interested in talking about his dad and how their relationship works, and that they don't get tired of each other. They sometimes disagree, but they get on fine, and that he had a period when he was 19 when he didn't work with his dad for a couple of years. And he said, you know, that was quite good, because then I realised I did want to work with him again after that. And this situation of him having a chance to be the world number one, I mean, I think it feels absurd to me. And yet, I congratulate him if he makes it, because he clearly fancies it, but listening to him.
I think it's helping him, that world number one thing. I think it's giving him
driving him a
slightly sharper set of fangs.
So, and I suppose maybe a different goal to go along with this one. It's interesting.
He's on a similar trajectory to Dominic Thiem, in that he was originally seen as a clay courter, but actually some of his biggest results have been on hard court. You know, he obviously reached the French Open final on clay, but final in Miami, semi-finals here. That's not dissimilar to Thiem, you know, winning Indian Wells. He hasn't won a clay court Masters team, but he has won Indian Wells. He's done well at the US Open. He's won it. And I think he spoke about that in his press conference as well, didn't he? That growing up in Norway, he spent half the year on an indoor hard court, and it was indoor today as well, and half the year on clay. And I almost think that he's aware of the talk around him as just a clay courter, and he's not really sort of leaning into it and playing with an obvious chip on his shoulder about that. But I do think just a little bit, it probably has annoyed him. And I think he's probably developed his game quite quietly on a hard court as well. And now he's a really complete player. He's not as dynamic or as exciting as Dominic Thiem. I don't think he ever will be. He doesn't hit the ball in such an explosive way.
The backhand is
still a weakness. I think his backhand return has improved quite a lot.
Berrettini made it look all right today.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's just quiet, steady improvement.
Yeah. He knows who he is, doesn't he?
He does.
And actually, I think that's why he was prepared back in the day to go and take on Kyrgios off the court. And I mean, Rob Moore of The Sun asked him about Kyrgios in the final question. I'd had my hand up for quite a while, because that was going to be my question. But fortunately, Rob got in there and just asked him, you know, about what happened and their relationship now. And it was quite interesting. He started off, you know, you always wonder, how's a player going to answer this? Because it's slightly difficult ground to navigate. And he started off by talking about the tennis and what a good player Kyrgios is. And he says, you never know what you're going to get from his tennis, and you never know what are you going to get from his mouth. And he then addressed the question. He was straightforward, and I liked that. He said, look, yeah, some things happened between us. It's fair to say for quite a while we weren't saying hello to each other when we passed each other in the corridor, but we do now.
Oh.
And he said that changed when Kyrgios came up to him at the Laver Cup and congratulated him on a match win. And he said that sort of helped things a little bit. But, you know, we'll see what happens next. He wasn't like saying everything's rosy and whatever, but he appreciated that. I would remind him, and I didn't get a chance to remind him, that since then Kyrgios also beat him and then said what he said into the camera on the court about
remind
how...
Remind me what he said.
He said, nothing to say now then, huh? Talk is over now. But anyway, Ruud stayed away from that. Before Matt and I go back and watch the rest of that match, Matt doubles today. We're getting into the sharp end. I got a chance to interview Wesley Kuhlhoff and Neil Skupski about their win there into the semi-finals. It's bubbling up, the doubles, isn't it?
Yeah, it was doubles day on Louis Armstrong Stadium because it was a washout everywhere else.
Yeah.
And I think there were five doubles matches back-to-back on that court. In the men's, Ram and Salisbury, who are the top seeds, day one, they will face Cabal and Farah. And number two seeds, Kuhlhoff and Skupski, will face number three seeds, Marcelo Arevalo and Jean-Julien Roger. So three of the top four seeds in the men's doubles semis.
He's been round the houses of partners, hasn't he, Jean-Julien Roger, in his time?
And then in the women's, Nicole Melichar Martinez and Ellen Perez, who are the form team. They've had a brilliant summer. They beat Sara Srivas Tormo and Kirsten Flipkins, who, I'll be honest, I thought had retired.
She had retired, Matt.
Mm.
She told us she'd retired. She had a lovely hug with Simona Halep at Wimbledon.
I'm not sure how I feel about this retiring, like having a big moment when you're retiring from singles and then just carrying on anyway and playing doubles.
Fair play, I say. Martina Hingis retired three times, didn't she?
Anyway, maybe this was her retirement. She's lost.
Yeah.
Three sets, I think.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not getting another fanfare on the podcast again, Kirsten. You've had that.
So yeah, that's the doubles that was played today.
Well, we will follow it all with interest for the remaining days. I mean, everything else has been washed out, so they've got quite a bit of catching up to do.
there was an announcement in the media cafe, which, by the way, was absolutely deserted at midday today when the singles matches started on Ash, presumably because so many media were here at 3 a.m. last night when Carlos Alcaraz was finishing the business.
Yeah.
Or this morning, rather. It was eerily empty. And they made this announcement to a totally deserted room at midday. So an hour after play was scheduled to start, with still potentially, you know, many hours to go, that all junior matches were cancelled for the day. Such was the horror of the weather forecast. They called off everything without a roof at midday.
Goodness. Just a word on Alcaraz Cilic, Matt. It was going on when we were on last night, and I didn't get through it all. I was asleep by the start of the fourth set, to be honest. You did. You got dragged in, drawn in, and you watched the lot. What was it like?
It was thrilling. It was maybe the best men's match of the tournament, I think.
Oh, great. Thanks a bunch. Yeah. That's the only one I haven't seen.
You missed, David, a Marin Cilic underarm serve.
Got a feeling I might have seen that in my sleep. Like, with it on and just kind of, just, you know, half asleep, sort of, and I was aware, I was sort of vaguely aware.
Yeah, David,
that
that's not sleep. What you think of is sleep. Let's talk about the definition of sleep.
You and I have different sleep, don't we?
Yeah. Matt, talk us through the Marin Cilic underarm serve, because I doubt there'll be another one.
Well, not after what Alcaraz did to it.
What did he do to it?
I mean, he just chased it down and easily won the point. It was like, what the hell are you doing that for? I'm the fastest guy on tour, basically.
Alcaraz,
fastest guy on tour against one of the biggest serves on tour. Mm. What's he doing?
Questionable.
It appeared like Alcaraz was trying to burrow an extra part of the backdrop to make even more room
for
himself.
I mean, that will be my lasting memory of the match. Just some of the balls that Alcaraz chased down. I mean, his movement is ridiculous. And I wasn't actually planning to watch to the end, but I just couldn't tear myself away because Alcaraz couldn't get fully ahead. You know, he went two sets to one up. He had break points galore in the third set and did that thing where he was quite wasteful, really.
Mm.
And Cilic was awesome and took the fourth set and then went up a break at the start of the fifth. And I really thought Cilic was going to be tough to stop at that point. credit to Alcaraz, he broke back straight away with an absolutely stunning shot. And just when I was beginning to flag for energy, WhatsApp pinged. And I thought, oh, maybe it's David, maybe it's Catherine, they're watching it. No, it was Catherine's brother, Math, back in the UK, who'd woken up early for a tennis match that he was meant to be playing at about 7 a.m, which he'd called off because he was watching Carlos Alcaraz.
He said,
that was amazing.
Got up at 6:30 to play tennis this morning. My tennis has been postponed by me. He said, are you on court with sleeping bags?
It is one of those, when there's an amazing match on and other people are asleep, you just want to wake them up, don't you?
Mm.
Oh, I love it. So, and Alcaraz now plays against Jannik Sinner, who had that incredible match against Ilya Ivashka.
And I'm into that because that's a rivalry. That's a rivalry that we need to be invested in.
I think this match is huge. Like, if Sinner wins, Sinner's beaten Alcaraz on every surface
this summer.
Yeah.
In big matches, two at slams, one in a tour final.
Yeah, like, it's huge.
It would be hard to make a case for Alcaraz, really, if
you know,
wins.
I think this could be, you know, the rivalry for the next few years. You know, tones get set early in rivalries. Richard Gasquet.
Are you comparing Richard Gasquet to Carlos Alcaraz?
You just never know.
Well,
I mean, you do know, but
I mean, even Federer and Nadal.
Yeah,
very good point.
Stages of rivalry. We don't know that it'll end up being a rivalry for the ages. But if it is, these early stages feel significant and formative.
They're well set for a rivalry, aren't they?
Definitely,
because their ages, their physicality, they seem to be in it for the long haul. These two.
And they have that Federer Nadal thing of really sort of recognising we could be onto something special together
here. Yeah, they like each other.
Together we could be greater than the sum of our parts. There were the clips of their practice session together in Montreal, was it? I really like that.
Okay, good. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that match now. Do you want to do shout-outs in person, Catherine, or do you want to write them in? What do you prefer?
Well, this isn't the end of the pod, is it?
No, I know, but we could change things around. You could just slot them in.
What would you prefer?
What would you prefer, Matt?
Should we do them now?
Yeah,
sure.
Let's do them now. In real time.
We've got Sarah Newman from Manchester.
Sarah.
Hello, Sarah.
Sarah says, I've been listening to the podcast since the US Open 2016, brackets, when you had the fight with the bus driver.
I remember that very well. That was also the one where you walked into a tree.
Was led into a tree, yes.
But the argument with the bus driver, if you want to go and listen to it, folks, it's still there. And you actually hear...
Don't do that.
Catherine and me having a conversation with a bus driver about letting Catherine on. And eventually we succeeded, didn't we?
I do get myself into these japes in New York. Because as expressed on a previous podcast, everybody is either an absolute delight that
Or not.
Or, what do you think you're doing, ma'am? Don't touch that, ma'am. And it's very difficult to know which end of the spectrum anyone's going to be at any given time.
Okay, well, Sarah, thank you so much, not only for being our friend, but for reminding
us of that.
I'm really pleased. In fact, I might go and have a quick listen to that later.
Why are you petting my dog, ma'am? That today.
That happens a lot.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And then I got...
Policemen
handed,
don't like that.
But then I got... I did ask. I said, is the dog working? And anyway, then it turns out there was a misunderstanding and actually he was fine with me petting the dog. And then I ended up being given the dog's business card with his Instagram details on it.
Okay.
But the exchange started in a unpleasant way. Anyway.
Right. Okay, but who's the next shout-out, Matt?
Catherine has the most... incredible days.
I know, nothing happens to us, does it? We just sit at our desks.
I had an anecdote about having a weird experience in a shop the other day where I needed to call the store assistant to get toothpaste for me because it was locked away. So Catherine said, oh yeah, I went there and ended up with the store assistant's number.
Yeah, I left Dwayne Reed with Yolanda shouting, call me, don't forget. I said, I won't, Yolanda. I'm really trying to forget.
Okay.
She was lovely, but right, Yolanda, I don't think we're going to hang out.
Free shout out for you there. who else we got?
We've also got Tarsine Afros.
Right, Tarsine.
Oh, hello.
Who is in Toronto.
Okay.
Thank you, Tarsine, for giving me an opportunity to remind everybody that I dangled off a very tall building in Toronto once and sobbed just in the process.
Another day in Catherine's life.
And finally, we've got Alex Tresedern from London, and we have met Alex. We met Alex in the Curtains Up pub after a day at Queen's last year,
Alex,
2021.
Is a lovely chap.
He was wearing his tennis podcast
t-shirt. Yes, he was.
Good pub, that.
Good pub. We had a little reunion, didn't we, in June for the old Queen's days. Oh, it's lovely.
Yeah. Oh, happy memories, Alex. Mm. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's a nice one. Thanks a lot. And Tarsine and Sarah, love you all. Brilliant.
Yes, thank you very much. Hello and thank you.
Yeah, okay. So, Catherine, we'll see you tomorrow. Matt, let's go and watch Kyrgios against Hachna.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longland all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription.
So Karen Khachanov is the US Open semi-finalist. Never been to a Grand Slam semi-final in his career before. And, I mean, what Chris Fowler on ESPN was saying is that Jaume Munar had the same likelihood of getting to the semi-finals as according to the bookmakers, or same likelihood of winning the tournament. And now Khachanov finds himself two matches away from being the US Open champion because he's beaten Nick Kyrgios in five sets, and he won the first set, he won the third set, and he won the fifth set. Matt is here. We've just watched it all. Pizzas, beer, and a slightly surprising result. Fair?
Yeah, I think so. I certainly wouldn't have picked Karen Khachanov to reach the semi-finals at the start of the tournament.
And we didn't.
And we definitely didn't. I wouldn't have picked him today. In fact, no. I know I said to someone that I think Kyrgios will roll him.
Oh.
So that was wrong.
So how in what way did he not roll him? What went wrong? We didn't see the first two sets in very much of, but...
And by all accounts, they were quite dull.
Right.
It doesn't sound like they were particularly great sets.
I feel better.
I don't think the rallies were particularly exhilarating, and I think there were many rallies. What we saw was pretty good, actually. It was pretty high quality, and Khachanov is a confusing player, because the match that I always think of is his one here at the US Open against Rafael Nadal from 2018 when, okay, he lost in four sets, but he was brilliant. He was powerful and strong and a handful for Nadal. And then we've just seen that so rarely over his career for such a big guy.
We saw it shortly before Matt Roberts' day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, I sort of have a bit of a soft spot because I feel like I have a job because of Karen Hatchinar.
he just won Paris and we handed you the microphone and yes. said, tell us about Karen Hatchinar,
yeah,
Matt.
And people seem to like my Karen Hatchinov takes, and here I am 4 years later. But you know, he's an imposing guy. I've interviewed Karen Hatchinov, stood by him, and you know, felt like I was in the darkness because he is so big, he covers you, and yet he doesn't often impose himself on a tennis court.
No,
both through his game and through his force of personality, and yet that is exactly what he did today. He went toe to toe with Kyrgios. His backhand in particular was standing up really well in the rallies, and he was clearly a bit annoyed about the pro Kyrgios crowd because he gave a bit of a chippy interview afterwards saying, I did it. Thanks for appreciating me now. It was sort of Medvedev 2019 light. It wasn't yes. quite that far.
They didn't quite get it, I don't
know.
No, think.
I don't think so. I think, well, most of them had left because Kyrgios had lost. But he did a good job of not showing that during the match. You know, he just played his own game. He didn't get sucked in by anything Kyrgios was doing. Just focused on his game, served big, hit big ground strokes, muscled the ball.
He shut the door on Kyrgios at the end, didn't he? Once he got that break, and he did blink when he had two break points for a double break in that fifth set, and I thought, oh, now we'll find out what he's made of. And, well, I think we did, because there were a couple of rallies where Kyrgios is stretching every sinew to keep the ball in. He's using all of his manipulation of a tennis ball to spin it back in. And he just kept heaving the forehand cross court. And it went wider and wider and wider until he won the point.
Yeah. No, it was really, really impressive, to be honest. Kyrgios did a great job to win the fourth set tiebreak. He played a flawless tiebreak. And then he played a very casual game at the start of the fifth set. It was the first time he'd been serving first in any of the sets, so he had a little advantage there, and he threw it away, didn't he? He played a forward unnecessary tweener, lost the point, lost serve, and you said, I mean, that could be it. Like, yeah. The way Hatchinov is serving,
even at about 15 all when he did that through the legs front facing tweener, and it landed in, but then he lost the point. I just thought, well, that you're just changing the feel of your approach right there, and everything that has just happened in the last hour has worked with you playing plan A type tennis, meat and potatoes tennis, okay, with the off pace shots and the drop shots, but none of the nonsense, you know, none of the stuff that is funny, but it's a Grand Slam quarter final, and it's right there for you. You've got the momentum, and he threw the momentum away. That's how it felt to me. He invited Hatchinov in. He said, come on to me. Well, Hatchinov did.
Yeah, he really did. He wrestled it from him, and Kyrgios, as you said, had little half chances, but Hatchinov shut the door on him, and that's back-to-back five-set wins now, isn't it? Because he's beaten Krenya Busta and Kyrgios over five. These are tough wins. Yeah, I just really didn't see it coming.
Kyrgios at the end absolutely destroyed two rackets. Not that surprising, really. I mean, you can understand the frustration. Whether you agree with that behaviour is you know, everybody's going to have their own view, but I can understand the frustration. That's a massive missed opportunity. This, we said it about Matteo Berrettini earlier. And I suppose you'd say it about any player in this draw, really, that loses now. But for Kyrgios, with his skill set, that is a real missed opportunity to not have Djokovic to face, to not have Nadal to face.
Yeah. To think how well he was playing the other night against Medvedev.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't have that level.
You've just wasted a win over Medvedev in a way. And then that's, you know, still a good win, but you've not backed it up. And that might sting a bit. So, bedtime, I think. It's been quite a night. It means that Casper Ruud is going to be up against Karen Khachanov now. We'll have to have a, I think I have to have a day to think about who I think is going to win that.
Casper Ruud, world number one, edges closer.
It does, doesn't it? Goodness me, that doesn't sound quite right somehow. But I mean, look, if he goes and wins the US Open, it'll feel better on that level. But we'll wait and see. We'll be back with another edition of the Tennis Podcast tomorrow night and every night during the US Open, of course. Do tell your friends. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you can. Leave a nice one. You know, we're trying our best here. Yeah, we have our mascot for the tournament, which is Phoebe. Thank you, Phoebe, for supporting us. We have our own mascots. I've got Darwin. Catherine's got Carter. Matt has the dearly departed Gerald. Any points today, Matt?
No points today. Gone big tomorrow.
Big. Mm. Okay, so newsletter, folks. Go for your newsletter. Show notes. We'll have the link to sign up to the newsletter. You can find out who Matt's gone big on. Have I gone big, do you think?
Medium?
Medium. I've gone medium, folks.
That'll get them signing up to the newsletter.
Sign up to the newsletter for a medium-sized prediction from me. Yeah, we've got our executive producers, Carl Weingartner and Chris Albert Lee. Billie Jean the Dog is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. And that's about it, I think.
We've
done a shout out, so we can go to bed.
It's a weird show tonight.
It's a weird old show, isn't it? It's a weird show most days. So tell your friends about us, and do become a friend if you'd like to get access to all our extra stuff and enter the competition. We'll see you tomorrow.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.